Sanatan Goswami is in Jagannath Puri, and we know that he has manifested terrible sores upon his body that itch and ooze. And Mahaprabhu is dealing with him in his own way as he desires. Now, at the end of this test of Sanatana Goswami, Rudderman. Sanatana Goswami writes the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he shows the depth of his realization. And we're reading these verses, and Sanatana Goswami's comments upon these verses that really show the viewpoint of the Braja Gopis. So Sanatana Goswami is revealing the depths of his heart. And then, again, in his pastimes with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and in his writings, he's revealing the process by which one can attain this type of depth. So now, the verse that is being spoken of is again from the Venu Gita, 21st chapter of the 10th canto, and he's speaking about which animals? Does anyone remember from yesterday? Deer, yes. And this is how the gopis are viewing the deer, as they, both the gopis and the deer, are hearing the sound of Krishna's flute. Blessed are all these foolish deer, because they have approached Maharaj Nanda's gorgeously dressed son after hearing him play on his flute. Indeed, both the doe and the bucks worship the Lord with looks of love and affection. The male and female deer are both worshipping Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, who is beautifully dressed. And what is the mode of their worship? Their looks, their glances, filled with love and affection. Srila Sanatana Goswami's comment. In this verse, another gopi glorifies the deer. The deer, being similar in species to the cows and other creatures tended by the personality of Godhead, are able to accompany them while they graze the cows and the other animals. The deer are also nearby. Danyasma means these deer are so fortunate. This is the view of the gopis. Or, considering the grammatical license granted to saintly authors like Vyasadeva, another way to understand Danyasma is we are fortunate. In other words, we consider it our fortune that these deer have responded to the flute song of our beloved Sri Nandanandana by approaching to worship him with all respect. The worship done by the deer was very simple. Perform nothing with nothing more than their loving glances. The deer had no paraphernalia at their disposal for worship, and other than those loving glances, nothing would have satisfied Krishna. The deer's method of worship was exceptionally pleasing to Krishna. This is what the deer were looking at. They saw Krishna decorated with wonderful forest ornaments, like flower garlands, and with peacock feathers and gunja berries in his hair. Thus, even though the deer had taken birth as unintelligent animals, mudamati, yet they were supremely fortunate. Or, understanding the meaning of of Mudamattaya differently. Just by hearing Krishna's flute, the deer lost their power to think clearly, and their internal and external senses all became stunned. This is the natural influence of Vraja. Even living beings possessed of various skills are deprived of them by the reverberation of Krishna's flute, and they are rendered dumb and immobile. They cannot speak. They act like inert beings. They cannot move. The doe, the gentle deer, normally stay hidden deep within the forest, but the sound of Krishna's flute drew them out into the open, where they came near Krishna, and, beholding his beauty, they were bewildered by Cupid. In that condition, they could think of nothing but Krishna. They simply gazed at him in great love, as if worshipping him. And their husbands also reacted the same way to the song of Krishna's flute. The doe and bucks, these most exalted of animals, this was the vision of the gopis, because they saw that the doe and the bucks, how fortunate they were able to look at Krishna and worship him, serve him, please him, just by the movement of the loving glances of their eyes. And the gopis, they could not even do that. They couldn't look directly at Krishna because of their elders being present. The doe and the bucks, these most exalted of animals, were endowed with such deep love for the Supreme Lord that they could never become proud of their good fortune. They always behaved like innocent creatures. As the gopis meditate on the devotional service of the deer, they cannot help but think, these deer are fortunate because they can worship Krishna along with their husbands. But our foolish husbands cannot tolerate our worship of Krishna. Therefore, despite being born as human beings, fully able to understand and act, we are unfortunate. In fact, we are most unfortunate. Even though born in the very virtuous and clever cowherd caste, because we cannot follow Krishna and listen to his flute while he wanders about in the forest in his forest dress. So beautiful, so wonderful. We cannot gaze at him with wide open eyes, and we cannot serve him. We cannot serve him with pleasing glances. And even if a few of us can occasionally perform such service for him, our husbands object. The word Krishna Sar means the black deer. But the word Sar also means important. So the gopis think, the husbands of the deer are called Krishna Sara because only Krishna is important to them. The attitude of our husbands, however, is just the opposite. This is pure Mahabhagavata thinking. Everyone is fortunate. Everyone loves Krishna but me. Actually, the cowherd men are also most fortunate Vaishnavas, exclusively devoted to Krishna. Still, the gopis, as subordinates, as wives, they feel shy to disclose to their husbands their worship of Krishna. Constrained by the husband-wife relationship, the gopis have to worship Krishna secretly as paramour. This unique style of worship enables the gopis to achieve the topmost limit of success, the extreme limit of success, the highest degree of pure love for Krishna. After the deer, the cows are glorified. Using their upraised ears as vessels, the cows are drinking the nectar of the flute song flowing out of Krishna's mouth. The calves, their mouths full of milk from their mother's moist nipples, stand still as they take Govinda within themselves through their tear-filled eyes, and they embrace Govinda within their hearts. This is wonderful consciousness, isn't it? Here is Srila Sanatan Goswami's comment on those words of the Braja Gopis. By far superior to the deer of Vrindavan forest are the cows that are personally tended by Sri Gopal. In this verse, Venugita 13, other gopis glorify Krishna's cows. To the cows, the sound of Krishna's flute was just like the nectar that is created on the moon. This means that Krishna's face seemed to be to them just like the moon. And anxious not to spill a drop of that nectar, they used their ears like cup palms to drink it carefully. In other words, they listened to the flute with rapt, complete attention. Their minds did not wander for half a moment. Despite the cowherd's vigilance, the savas or calves, some of them newly born, had somehow joined their mothers and were busy drinking their mother's milk. But as soon as the calves heard Krishna's flute, they forgot that what they were doing. They simply kept their mother's milk in their mouths without swallowing it. They were stunned, and the milk would dribble from their lips. The cows were so absorbed in drinking the nectar from Krishna's moon-like face that they too became motionless, just like corpses, dead bodies. As love for Krishna swelled in the hearts of the cows, milk spontaneously flowed from their udders, and the grass that they were eating remained in their mouths, because they were unable to chew. The cows were raised to the highest platform of love of God by seeing Krishna with their eyes and embracing Him with their hearts. They were so moved that drops of tears appeared in the eyes of those cows. Or taking color to mean producing, the cows were shedding profusely tears. They were crying and crying. Hearing this description, the gopis commented, "Dear friends, if the cows act like that, how can we gopis as human beings, how could we not act like that? How we should be excused for being driven to extremes by the force of prema." One more. After the cows, the bulls. When Krishna vibrates his flute, Krishna's bulls, the deer, and the cows, they stand in groups at a great distance. They are all captivated by the sound, and they stop chewing the food in their mouths, and they cock their ears, stunned. They appear as if asleep, or like figures in a painting. Here's what the gopis say, and this is the comment of Sanatana Goswami. Dear friends, because only amongst friends does anyone reveal what is deep in their hearts. Dear friends, please now hear something wonderful. When the bulls, the deer, and the cows hear Krishna's flute, they feel the urge to approach him. They all come from far away, and they stand nearby him. He's completely attractive. No one can help it, even the animals. They stand near him, fully enchanted by his flute. They forget about all the grass in their mouth. And it either stays there unchewed or it falls to the ground from their mouths. Their ears stand upright. The animals remain still, as if sleeping or as if not being living beings, but rather painted images. Thus, these animals, bewildered by prema, lose their power of thought, and they lose their power to act. Or, explaining what happens in another way, at first the cows hear Krishna's flute from a distance, as an indistinct murmur, without embellishments or even a discernible melody. But simply that faint sound is enough to capture their hearts and to completely agitate them. After a short time, when the cows, bulls, and deer hear the song of Krishna's flute more clearly, they feel fear that death may come and separate them from Krishna. So, to prevent themselves from hearing any more, they lift their front legs and they forcibly cover their ears with their front legs. The gopis started by saying, "Please now hear something wonderful." When that fails to stop the flute sound, they come closer to Krishna, holding blades of grass in their mouths as a sign of humble entreaty. And when that also fails to stop Krishna from playing his flute, then they become stunned. As these animals fell into a stupor, they came together into a densely packed group, like figures posed together in a painting. One other short one, and then we'll conclude. So, we're gazing into the hearts of the Braja Gopis, and is exactly what is in their heart is expanded by the very compassionate and open-heartedness of Srila Sanatana Goswami. Now, the cowherd boys. Sometimes Lord Krishna grew tired from fighting, play fighting with his friends, and he laid down at the base of a tree. He rested, and just know that these very, very old trees around here, here we are, Govardhan. The dust, the trees. How did Krishna favor the trees? Does anyone remember from one of the first verses we read? With his touching and his glance too. He would touch the trees to pick the flowers and twigs to decorate himself. And he would glance at them. So this is another thing he did with the trees. He placed his head and he laid down at the base of the trees when he was tired from playing with his friends. And he rested upon a bed made of soft twigs and buds, using the lap of a cowherd friend as his pillow. Here are the words of Sanatana Goswami. Here Sukadev Goswami describes some of the services the cowherd boys did for Krishna while he rested in the forest. These pastimes were part of Krishna's Pogandalila of tending his cows in Sri Vrindavan forest. Krishna would enjoy lying down to rest at various times, such as when he was tired from wrestling with his friends. And he would do this in various places, such as the cool, breezy shore of the Yamuna. To rest comfortably, he would choose the base of a kadamba tamal, or another tree that provided great shade. Anticipating Krishna's daily pastimes, the goddess Vrinda would have beds of leaves, flowers, and young soft twigs waiting at the bases of those trees. Or, sometimes, Krishna's gopa friends would arrange this bedding when they arrived. Even though Krishna laid down on only one bed at a time, Srila Sukadeva refers to the beds in the plural, either because many devotees were involved in making them, or simply out of great respect for the paraphernalia of Krishna's pastimes. Or else because the coward boys would compete to make several different beds, and Krishna would expand his form to please all the boys by simultaneously lying down on each bed. Unseen by the makers of the others, Krishna would lie on each bed. And Krishna would accept as his pillow the lap of his most intimate friend, Srimati Radharani's brother, Sridham. Quite wonderful. Tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall read of Krishna singing with the boys. They would play and enjoy like anything. And just imagine what it would be like to play. Of course we can't imagine, but how wonderful, how wonderful, how wonderful. Does anyone remember anything from yesterday? Yes.
Out of all nine devotional
services,
chanting is the most important.
Chanting so important, most important. And we said chants niraparadi, without offense. It is the treasure, the great wealth of the life of Sanatana Goswami. It is Krishna himself. Anyone remember anything else? That was right at the beginning of class. What happened? Because Sanatan walked over the hot sand, feeling anandite mana, great bliss in his own mind. He did not even notice, because he was being called by Mahaprabhu, he felt so ecstatic, he did not notice the heat of the sand. Such ecstasy, such living on a different platform than the bodily platform. So fixed. And he did this to avoid committing an offense. What was the offense? Touching the servants of Lord Jagannath with his oozing, sore-filled body, sore-covered body. And Mahaprabhu was so pleased with Sanatan. What did he do? He embraced him and broke all etiquette and broke the heart of Sanatan again. And then he left. Jagannanda came, and Sanatana Goswami revealed his mind, the difficulties he was experiencing, to Jagannanda. He said, "I cannot see Lord Jagannath. My body is covered by sores, and Mahaprabhu is insisting that he embrace me again and again, and the pus from these sores cover his transcendental body. It is intolerable for me. He is my worshipful Lord. It is breaking my heart." And Jagannanda advised him not to do as Sanatana was thinking before, not to kill himself, not deha tyag, giving up his body. Do something positive. Take shelter of your service, he said. Go to Vrindavan. This is the place that Mahaprabhu has given you, your family, given to you and Rupa, and also later to Sijiva. He has given it to you as your Prabhu Datta Desha. This is his gift. He has spoken to you of all the service that he wants you, that he will perform through you. You have already seen Mahaprabhu. You will see Lord Jagannath at the festival. Then you can return to Vrindavan. Your purpose will be have been fulfilled, and you will not have to have your heart continually broken by the sweet, affectionate mercy of Mahaprabhu. And Sanatana Goswami replied, "You have spoken well, Jagannanda." So the next day, Mahaprabhu went to see Haridas and Sanatana Goswami. Haridas Thakur immediately offered his obeisances to the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the Lord, in great ecstatic love, embraced Thakur Haridas. And then, Sanatana Goswami offered his obeisances. He offered his danda pranam, dandavats, to Mahaprabhu, but from a distant place. And I bet you can guess why. But Mahaprabhu called him again and again to embrace him. "Come here, come here." But out of fear of committing offenses, he was completely fearful of committing offenses to Mahaprabhu. He was the emblem of etiquette, of propriety. And he could not tolerate covering Mahaprabhu's body with the pus, infectious pus. So Sanatana Goswami, Mahaprabhu was calling him, "Come, come, come." But Sanatana wouldn't go forward. But the Lord then, he went forward to meet Sanatana Goswami. And then Sanatan Bhagi Pache Karena Gamana Balat Karidari. Balat, with force. Using force, Prabhu Kaila Alingana, he embraced him. He would not let Sanatana Goswami go. Sanatana Goswami wanted to go. This was breaking his heart. He backed away. The Lord embraced him by force. He caught him. And then the Lord took both Haridas and Sanatan with him, and they sat down in a sacred place. And then Sanatana Goswami, who was completely renounced, he began to speak. "Oh, Mahaprabhu, raise your hand if you do deity worship here." Oh, so many of the devotees. Imagine if your body, oh, don't imagine this. You can't imagine it. You can't imagine it. It is painful just to think about it. We bathe the Lord in Panchamrita. Honey, ghee, what else? Milk, yogurt. Beautiful things, auspicious items that even by themselves they have an illuminating, auspicious, vibrant, sattvic feel to them. Sanatana Goswami's, because of his love, he was feeling so much pain and unhappiness. So he began to speak to the Lord. "I came here for my own benefit, but viparita, I'm getting the opposite. I'm getting just the opposite of what I wanted. I am unfit to render service. I simply commit offenses day after day." Notice he didn't say, "You are causing me to commit offenses day after day." This is not the mood of a devotee. He's seeing his own part in this. "My sinful actions and reactions have caused these sores to manifest on my body, and because of my sinfulness, my tendency towards sin that does not die, I'm committing these offenses. By nature, I am low born. I am a contaminated reservoir of sinful activities. This is my body. It is a reservoir of my karma. And my karma is obviously sinful, and my sinfulness is manifesting in this type of a problem. And it is causing me, just by my existence, being here, I'm offending you. If you touch me, sir, that will be a great offense on my part. Moreover, blood is running from infected, itching sores on my body, and smearing your body with moisture, still you touch me by force. Bibhatsa, this is horrible. Sparshita, this touch is horrible, my dear sir. Due to your nature, you do not have even a pinch of aversion to touching my body. There is no dvesh, which is in a horrible condition. Because of this offense, everything auspicious will be vanquished for me. Therefore, I see I will get nothing auspicious by staying here. Kindly give me orders allowing me to return to Vrindavan after the Rath Yatra festival. Very reasonable request, it seems. Some reconciliation to solve the problem. I've consulted Jagannanda Pandit for his opinion, and he has also advised me to return to Vrindavan. Hearing this attempt to escape this trap by which Mahaprabhu has caught Sanatan Goswami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became angry, and he expressed his anger by chastising Jagannanda Pandit, who was not there. Rather than agreeing, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised Jagannanda, who made the suggestion, another way of escape, cut. And he said, Mahaprabhu said, in other words, Mahaprabhu was holding him tighter. He said, Jagannanda Jaga is only a new boy. He's just a kid. Just a baby, practically speaking. But he has become so proud that he thinks himself competent to advise a person like you. In affairs of spiritual advancement, and even in ordinary practical dealings, you are on the level of his spiritual master. Yet not knowing his own value, he dares to advise you. So he's bringing up these points of etiquette again, while at the same time overriding all points of etiquette. He's holding him by etiquette and then beating him by neglecting all etiquette. Amara upadeshta tumi, pramanika arya. You are on the level of my advisor. Indeed, in Ramakeli, it was Sanatan Goswami who advised Mahaprabhu not to go to Vrindavan surrounded by so many people, like a jaduwala, like a magician, a cheap magician. He said, when you go to Vrindavan, you go alone. He wasn't saying it in that advisory mood. He was very humbly presenting this opinion to Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu listened to him, and instead of going to Vrindavan, proceeding to Vrindavan from Ramakeli, he went back to Jagannath Puri. You are on the level of my advisor, for you are an authorized person. But Jaga wants to advise you. This is but the impudence of a naughty boy. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was thus chastising Jagannanda Pandit, Sanatana Goswami fell at the Lord's feet and said, I can now understand the fortunate position of Jagannanda. I can also understand my misfortune. No one in this world is as fortunate as Jagadananda. Sir, you are making Jagadananda drink the nectar of affectionate relationships, whereas by offering me honorable prayers, by praising me, you are making me drink the bitter juice of Nim and Nishinda. You're giving me something bitter to taste. This is the opposite of the materialistic mind. The materialistic mind takes chastisement as the bitterest of fruits. No one wants to be chastised. Rather, the mind wants to be praised. Advaitacharya, wishing to be chastised by Mahaprabhu, he preached impersonalism by teaching Yoga Vasishta. So that Mahaprabhu came, he was so angry, he pulled the Advaitacharya down from the Vyasasana and beat him until Sita Takarani came and said, "Stop, you'll kill this old man." And Advaitacharya said, "Thank you very much. Now you're showing me the affection that I deserve." But who has such a minimum of false ego or no false ego that can tolerate this? Only someone indeed who has no false ego. Rather, the mind likes to be praised. Yes, you're a wonderful devotee. You're this, you're that, you're wonderful, you're this, you're that. But Sanatana Goswami was so devoid of any pride, of any materialistic mind, of any false ego, that he just switched it around. You're showing Jagadananda affection and intimacy by chastising him and me? No intimacy. Praise. There's one. Let's see if I can quickly find it. Not that one. This is very foreign to the contemporary mentality, especially the Western psyche. You know, the children, if their parents chastise them too much or something, they can bring them to court in the West and sue them. In some countries, you can go and a 16-year-old girl that I know of, she went to the civil services, the welfare department, and said, "My parents are crazy. I can't live with them anymore. They're Hare Krishnas, and I have to move out. I need welfare support." And they gave it to her. Crazy. No one likes chastisement at all. This is due to an overdeveloped sense of importance, false importance, obviously, because in this world all we could ever be is insignificant. In 50 years, in 30 years, or 100 years, no one will even exist in this world, most probably, that will even know that we ever existed. And yet, I'm so important, you chastise me. Do you know who I am? Here is a lecture, part of a lecture by Prabhupada. And actually, I was there. I don't remember this part. The mind tends to block out what it doesn't want to remember. Japan, April 1972. Where is our Madhu Mangal? Yes, Tokyo. No, it was actually in a faraway place. I can't remember. Krishna chastised Arjuna. "Why are you lamenting for this body, your body and your brother's body, your grandfather's body, your children's body? You are not your body." Therefore, the first dealing was chastisement. Krishna was accepted as spiritual master. A spiritual master has the right to chastise. Father, spiritual master, they're advised to chastise. putram cha shisham cha tadiyen natulaliyat. So father and teacher, as advised by Chanakya Pandit, you should always chastise your son and disciple. Chastise. Tadayet. Tadayet means simply chastise. Always find out mistake. And he's telling the devotees who are sitting there, don't be angry. But it is the business of the teacher and the father simply to find out your mistakes, not to find out your good things. Tadayen natu lalayet. This culture, this Vedic culture, is constructed in such a way that everyone from the very beginning of life becomes a servant. If there is an older brother who is 1 year or older than the next brother, he is the authority, and the younger one will serve him and listen to him. It is perfect for developing spiritual consciousness. But the current methodology or the consciousness that everyone wishes to develop is perfect for material advancement. Be independent. Don't listen to anyone. Especially you shouldn't listen to your parents, because evolution, because we're evolving, and who's more evolved? Your parents or you? Your parents don't even know how to use the internet properly. They become confused by mobile phones. How could you listen? If you listen to your parents, you'll get in the way of the progress of humanity. So become independent, do something. You can do it, you can do it. And the material world progresses in a particular materialistic way, and so many things are achieved, so many things are invented, but the culture goes to hell and people are miserable and it's so difficult. In the Vedic culture, it was set up so respect is given to the old people, the wise people who've been through life, so that they can put life in a perspective for the younger people of what's important and what's not important, because when you're young, what's important to you is completely different than when you're old, when you've already been through life. So the elders were given respect so that they can pass on some wisdom, so that the children don't have to learn everything the hard way by going through the miseries of life and finding out what's valuable and not valuable and becoming wounded and scarred like anything. So contemporary culture is very much against this type of a thing. It's counter to it. Sometimes lalayat means patting. Tadayen, always chastise, always chastise. Not to lalayat. Lalayat means patting. Oh, my dear son, my dear boy, you are so nice, you have done so wonderfully. Sometimes it is done, but it is the business of the teacher and the father to chastise. Never recognize the disciple's business or the son's business as very good. Then they will spoil. It was a different culture, a different universe, practically speaking. Very different. And the whole culture supported this. And there was no choice, practically speaking. You couldn't run away, practically speaking. There was nowhere to go. And if you chastise, then they will be very much qualified. Don't pat, simply chastise. This is the injunction, the moral injunction. So far as we were concerned, when our spiritual master used to chastise, we took it as a blessing that it was very nice. And he would chastise like anything. Damn rascal, foolish, stupid, anything. All good words. One day it so happened that it was not my fault. Another older god brother, Prabhupada was speaking, meaning Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So I was very much fond of hearing. That gentleman, he was a retired doctor. So he wanted to say something. He should not have done so, but just like, well, so naturally I also started listening to what he wanted to say. And Prabhupada saw it, and he became so angry. So he knew that my attention was drawn by him. He chastised him like anything. He was an old man, actually almost like his age. So he was paying 60 rupees in those days per month as a donation to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So he became so angry. He said, "Do you think that because you pay 60 rupees, you have purchased us, that you can do anything you like?" He said like that. Very strong words he used. "Do you think," and he said to me, Prabhupada said, "Do you think I'm speaking for others? You have already learned everything, that you can divert your attention?" So many ways he was very, very angry. You see, this is nice to chastise. So Sanatana Goswami was fully qualified. No false ego. Fully surrendered. He had fully given himself. A chastisement. This type of a show of affection is a test of sorts. We'll speak about this soon. So when Sanatana Goswami saw that Mahaprabhu was chastising Jagannanda and praising him, he said, "You're making me drink bitter neem fruit." Neem, as everyone knows, is so bitter. "It is my misfortune," Sanatana said, "that you have not accepted me as one of your intimate relations." When someone is intimate, chastisement for their welfare, out of affection, out of affection. And when the person knows, and this is the difference between now and then, that then people were very, very secure. They always accepted, "Oh, this is coming from someone, my father, my teacher, my guru, and he loves me. It is for my good." This was the wiring, so to speak, of their consciousness. They were programmed. They were very secure in this way. But nowadays, there is no trust. Why is he chastising me? He doesn't care about me. The father has entrusted them. Teacher, guru. So it's so difficult to make spiritual advancement because all our wiring, the psychological wiring, the whole culture. We don't like nowadays that when you talk about politicians, people talk about them with such disrespect. They're all corrupt, and everyone knows they're corrupt, and this and that, and no one trusts the politicians. Family members, you don't know if there's going to be divorce, this, that. There's no trust in the relationships. The teachers, I was in a store in Australia. Just went to purchase something in a pharmacy, and one of the ladies who was serving everyone, she was talking to her friends, and she said, "Yeah, this product is really good. Trust me, I'm a priest." She was being sarcastic. "Trust me, I'm a priest." Means what she was saying. You can't trust a priest. So much child abuse goes on. Speaking about a church. So much, "Trust me, you can't trust the president, the prime minister, the government, there's no king, you can't trust the priest." This destroys everyone's ability to trust anyone. So therefore we're suddenly asked to surrender to God and trust him, and we have no practical conception or experience of trust in our consciousness. So the culture is so counter-supportive of surrender to God. Because what do people say nowadays? "I only trust myself." And it's obvious there's no one more untrustworthy than me. I have more experience of that than anyone. But still, this is the conclusion that everyone reaches when, because the authorities have, and this is Kali Yuga, the authorities prove themselves not worthy of trust, and it gives the independent souls all the excuses they require to not trust anyone, but you can't live by not trusting anyone, so they just trust their own crazy minds and become so miserable, so miserable. So therefore, to overcome Kali Yuga, to overcome Kali Yuga and trust Krishna and surrender to Krishna for the victims and inhabitants of Kali Yuga is not easy. But it can be done. It can be done. And if we want to go to Goloka Vrindavan, it has to be done. We have to trust. Trust means faith. Without faith, what can we do? That's the beginning. Adoj Shraddha. This is the bija, the seed of devotion. This is the adhikar that is required. So there is a way in Kali Yuga. Will be talked about soon. It's kirtan, it's chanting Krishna's names that makes up for what we lack. But it's chanting in a very specific way. And that way is recognizing one's lack and inability and then chanting in great humility and taking shelter of the holy names. Harinam Namasrayami. That was what Rupa Goswami said. We have to call out to the holy names of Krishna, to Giriraj, to the dust of Braja, to the great personalities, to Prabhupada, to Sanatana Goswami, to Mahaprabhu. There's no lack of great personalities to call out to with a full heart. With a full heart, we call out when there's true need. But unless we have a desire on this side, and unless we experience our incapacity on this side, there will be no need. There will be, the chemistry will not cause us to call out with a full heart, and therefore we won't get the result. And that's why we tend not to get the result. But watch Sanatana Goswami. He does not move from his desire to please Mahaprabhu. Even though, amazingly enough, he is so feeling himself so unqualified. He's so qualified in every way, but he's experiencing himself as completely unqualified. And therefore, because he experiences himself as unqualified, he has the qualification for taking shelter, taking full shelter, because he doesn't think, oh, I can do it myself. He thinks, I'm the lowest. Haridas Thakur, his association, I am the lowest. Their misfortunes, whether it's something by birth or something that happened to us in our life, or a great disease that covers our body and causes us to commit offenses or some weakness, these misfortunes can be turned into fortune by the process of humility and taking shelter. But let's go on and hear more about the test. So Sanatana Goswami says, is my misfortune, O Mahaprabhu, that you have not accepted me as one of your intimate relations, that you are taking the trouble to mold me, by chastisement. But actually, Mahaprabhu is completely molding Sanatana Goswami by how he's dealing with him and testing him and embracing him and going counter to his own desire, Sanatana Goswami, to not be touched by Mahaprabhu due to the oozing source. He's completely molding him, and the purpose of the chastisement is to mold. So he catches Mahaprabhu in a sense. His humility catches Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu responds, and he says, but you are completely independent, Sanatana says. You are the independence of pre-personality of Godhead. You're not considering me an intimate. But what can I do? You act independently. Hearing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was somewhat ashamed. He'd been caught in something that Sanatana has caught him. Just to satisfy Sanatana Goswami, he spoke the following words. My dear Sanatana, please do not think that Jagannanda is more dear to me than you. In fact, he's squeezing Sanatana very tightly. However, I cannot tolerate transgressions of the standard etiquette. You are an experienced authority in the Shastras, where Jagga is just a young boy. He's even calling him by an intimate name. You have the power to convince even me. In many places, you have already convinced me about the ordinary behavior and devotional service. Jagga advising you is intolerable for me. Therefore, for that reason, I'm chastising you. I offer you praise not because I think of you as being outside an intimate relationship with me, but because you are actually so qualified that one is forced to praise your qualities. Although one has affection for many persons, different types of ecstatic love, bhavudaya, different types of moods or emotions awaken according to the nature of one's personal relationships. You consider your body dangerous and awful, but I think your body is like nectar. Actually, your body is transcendental, never material. You are thinking of it, however, in terms of material conception. Even if your body were material, I still could not neglect it, for the material body should be considered neither good nor bad. Now he's preaching to him very high philosophy and morality and everything. Anything, and then he quotes Shastra from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Anything not conceived in relationship to Krishna should be understood to be illusion, maya. None of the illusions uttered by words or conceived in the mind are factual. Good, bad, this is all manodharma. Just illusion. It's just the mind's activities, nature. Because illusion is not factual, now moving logically in Shastra, there is no distinction between what we think is good and what we think is bad. When we speak of the absolute truth, such speculations do not apply. So this is all true. But is this why Mahaprabhu is acting the way he's acting towards Sanatana? Not at all. And Mahaprabhu continues. In the material world, conceptions of good and bad are all mental speculations, manodharma. Therefore, saying this is good, this is bad, it is all a mistake. And then he quotes Bhagavad Gita. Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavi hastini. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision. A learned, a gentle brahmana, a cow, an elephant, a dog, a dog eater. What is this body? You are saying it is bad. I am a sannyasi. It means nothing. I have to be neutral. I have to be equal. More Bhagavad Gita. One who is fully satisfied in knowledge, obtained and practically applied in life, who is always determined and fixed in his spiritual position, who completely controls his senses, and who sees pebbles, stone, and gold on the same level, is understood to be a perfect yogi. True, but this is not in what in Mahaprabhu's heart. Since I'm in the renounced order, my duty is to make no distinction, but instead be equipoised. My knowledge must be equally disposed towards sandalwood pulp and dirty mud. For this reason, I cannot reject you. Is that the reason why Mahaprabhu was embracing him? If I hated you, I would deviate from my occupational duty. Haridas Thakur speaks, "My dear Lord, what you have spoken deals with external formalities. I do not accept it." "My Lord, we are all fallen. But you have accepted us due to your attribute of being merciful to the fallen. See how this point is nicely placed in there. These two are the most humble of souls. And they are holding always, constantly, to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as their only shelter. They have given themselves to him. They are completely humble. They are accepting him as fully as their shelter. So he can do with them as he likes. And his acceptance of them, Thakur Haridas, is not because we are qualified, but because you are merciful. This is the way to chant Krishna's holy names. This is the way to take shelter of the great personalities. This is well known all over the world, Thakur Haridas said. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled. He's been caught again. Listen, because the devotees catch their Lord all the time, like Mother Yasoda. She bound Krishna with her devotion. She bound him tight with her devotion. But Jiva Goswami explains, as soon as she turned her back, he dragged the mortar. Of course, he was crying when she was standing there. And then as soon as she walked away, "Now I've taught you a lesson, and you boys make sure he doesn't do any harm." And he's crying and crying, and the tears and the mascara, and he's really fearful. But as soon as she goes, he starts laughing. And he says, "Let's go." And he pulls the mortar. And where does he pull the grinding mortar? To the house of one gopi, and he steals butter. Then he pulls it to another, and he's still tied up, and he steals more butter. But now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to remove the last hiding place of Sanatan. First, Sanatan wanted to leave by committing suicide. Then he wanted to leave by going to his service, legitimate. But it wasn't what Mahaprabhu wanted. So what was he taking shelter of? That I'm causing Mahaprabhu trouble. My beloved Lord, who I love, I'm causing difficulty. It was true on one level. Completely natural to think like that. But it was counter to what Mahaprabhu wanted. Now Mahaprabhu is going to remove even that. Listen, Haridas and Sanatan. Now I'm speaking the truth about how my mind is actually attached to you. My dear Haridas and Sanatan, I think of you as my little boys to be maintained by me. The maintainer never takes seriously any faults of the maintained. I always think of myself as deserving no respect. But because of affection, I always consider you to be but like my little children. And indeed, he was maintaining them both. that had been described before. Feeding them the best mahaprasadam from Jagannath, giving them a place to stay, directing them. Whenever a child passes stool and urine that touch the body of the mother never hates the child. On the contrary, she takes much pleasure in cleaning him. The stool and urine of the maintained child appear like sandalwood pulp to the mother. Similarly, when the foul moisture oozing from the itches of Sanatan touches my body, he is like my baby. I love him so much, like that. It is that intimate. I love him so much that whatever comes from his body, I have no hatred for him. When those sores touch my body, this is the intimacy of love. Haridas Kahe. Tumi Ishwara Dayamaya. You are the Supreme Lord. What am I going to say now? And you are Dayamaya. You are full of mercy. Toma Gambira Riddaya Bhujana Nayaya. That Gambir means deep. Tomar, your Riddaya heart. Your deep heart. Bhujana Nayaya. I cannot understand. My dear sir, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you are most merciful towards us. No one can understand what is within your deeply affectionate heart, why you do what you do. You embrace the leper Vasudev, whose body was fully infected by worms. You are so kind that in spite of his condition, you embraced him. So what you are doing to Sanatan is not within the scope what you already have done even. Why you do what you do, I cannot say, but you are doing it for your own purposes. You embrace Vasudeva, the leper, and by embracing him, text 190, you made his body as beautiful as Cupid. We cannot understand the waves of your mercy. How your merciful desire works, we cannot understand. You have the power to change a leper's body and make it cured and beautiful by one embrace. The waves of your mercy are very powerful. But when you embrace Sanatan, you're just breaking his heart and not curing his body even. Who can understand? We cannot understand the way that your waves of your mercy, the devotees are the greatest surfers of the waves of the mercy of Krishna. That is how they conceive of their riding their life. Just riding the waves of the mercy of Krishna. And there is never a dull moment, in case you have not noticed it. We cannot comprehend. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being caught again, pulls out philosophy again. The body of a devotee is never material. It is considered to be transcendental, full of bliss. Chidanandamaya, speaking philosophy, truth. But again, is this what is motivating Mahaprabhu? At the time of initiation, when a devotee fully surrenders unto the service of the Lord, and therefore he gets a name of Krishna, all Krishna's associates with Dasa or Dasi, because now we conceive of ourselves as Krishna's servant. So when one surrenders into the service of the Lord, Krishna accepts him to be as good as himself. When the devotee's body is thus transformed into spiritual existence, the devotee in that transcendental body renders service to the lotus feet of the Lord. And then he quotes from the Bhagavatam again. And then Krishna somehow or another manifested these itching sores on the body of Sanatana Goswami and sent him here to test me. If I had hated Sanatana Goswami and had not embraced him, I would certainly have been chastised for offenses to Krishna. Is this what is in Mahaprabhu's mind? Sanatana Goswami is one of the associates of Krishna. There could be not any bad odor from his body. On the first day I embraced him, I smelled the aroma of Chatushama, a mixture of sandalwood pulp, camphor, agro, and musk. Mahaprabhu is taking away the refuge of Sanatan that I'm causing Mahaprabhu difficulty. And this is stopping him from fully just putting himself in Mahaprabhu's hands on a superficial level. And Mahaprabhu is squeezing him between these two ends. In fact, however, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced the body of Sanatana Goswami, this is 198, by the Lord's touch alone, there was manifest a fragrance exactly like that of sandalwood pulp. It's true. It was true. And still Sanatana Goswami couldn't do it because of his mood of devotion. Now, what is he going to say now? He cannot commit suicide. He cannot run to Vrindavan. He cannot even say that my body is oozing infectious pus and covering your transcendental body because the smell of and fragrance of sandalwood is being manifest every time Mahaprabhu embraces him. Text 199. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "My dear Sanatan, do not be aggrieved, for when I embrace you, I actually get great pleasure. Stay with me in Jagannath Puri for 1 year, so I can embrace you again and again and again and again. And after that, I shall send you to Vrindavan." Sachinanda Maharaj, he describes it as always as the tests of the Lord as being the blacksmith beating the hot iron and shaping it with the anvil on the anvil. I tend to think of it like being in the sugarcane juicer that you may see outside. And after saying this, and Sanatana Goswami, what can he say now? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes to him and embraces him, and immediately Sanatana's itches disappear and his entire body resembles the color of gold. Haribo! Seeing the change, Haridas Thakur, greatly astonished, told the Lord, "This is your pastime. My dear Lord, you made Sanatana Goswami drink the water of Jarikanda, and you actually generated the consequent itching sores on his body. And after thus causing these itching sores, you examined Sanatan. You tested him. You squoze him. You hammered him. You broke him apart. You peeled off all the layers. Because when there's pain, because it's so nice, easy to say, 'Oh, I love you, Krishna. I'm fully surrendered,' as long as things are going the way we want. But when there's pain, when there's difficulty, as we were speaking yesterday, where does the consciousness go? Does it run from the shelter of the Lord? Or does it grasp the feet of the Lord more tightly?" And that's the beginning. That's the beginning. That's the beginning of the great journey to Braja. That only holding on. I have nowhere else to go. After thus causing these itching sores, Haridas gives the conclusion on it. You examine, Sanatana Goswami, Pariksha Karila Satane. No one can understand your transcendental pastimes. Why you do what you do to whom? After embracing both Haridas Thakur and Sanatana Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned to his residence, which was called what? What is it called? Gambhira. And what does Gambhira mean? Very deep. Very deep. He returned to his ever-deep residence. If we want Mahaprabhu to live in our heart has to become very deep. No wavering and quivering. The root of our bhakti has to be deep. Then, both Haridas Thakur and Sanatana Goswami, how do you deal with a master like this? They've given themselves to him already. They love him already. And in ecstatic love, they began to describe the Lord's transcendental activities. They just talked and talked about the amazing personality that they've given themselves to with great love. Who was completely always acting in his own way for their welfare. Now let us talk about surrender and tests. For my purification and perhaps others. Now, there's a very nice article written by our Satchinanda Maharaj that he has on his Sharanagati website about tests. There's a lot of... It really contains the essence. But I won't read from it directly. The basic principle, or a basic principle of Krishna consciousness, an unavoidable principle, is that we're going to be tested. I'm a devotee. I want to serve Krishna. Oh, really? Let's see. You want to go to Vrindavan? You don't want anything of this world? Really? Let's see. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur just... There's a list of 25 statements of his that are quite wonderful. Out of those 25, the first one is, we are put to test and trial in this world. Only those who attend the kirtan of the devotees can succeed. The sixth one, those favored by God find their path set by thorns, not rose petals. By the way, he says thorns. The Lord, Gaurasunda, puts his devotees in various difficulties and associations to test their patience and their strength of mind. Success depends on their good fortune. Good fortune can mean luck or it can mean the kind disposition of the Lord. I would like to read all these, but there's not time. There will be tests. Everyone goes through tests. What is being tested? Usually we take the test and find out what's being tested after, long after. But basically what's always being tested is where our shelter is. What do we actually want? What is at the core of our heart. Where is our shelter? And Krishna, what he wants, is to place himself in the core of our hearts, his lotus feet, along with those of his dearest in our hearts. He wants that there. So the tests are like shaking. There's many reasons for tests, and we'll talk about them gradually. But they're like shaking. The basic purpose is to shake so that everything other than what is truly for our benefit will be removed. But it's not pleasant. Why? Because we're attached. In a verse by that Preetu Maharaj, which is very essential to understand the nature of tests, he says to the Lord, because the Lord says to him, what benedictions you want from me? And he says, I'll give you whatever you want, he says. What would you like? What would you like? Did you ever ask yourself that? Would you like your own planet? Or at least everyone else to get off of this one? Or at least certain people? What would you like? What would it take to buy you? Don't think about it. Do not ask me, O Lord, to take some material benefit from you. But as a father, not waiting for the son's demand, does everything for the benefit of the son, please bestow upon me whatever you think is best for me. This is what's being tested, this trust, this surrender. That I've given myself to Krishna. And this is what we said was the benefit of Sharanagati, as described by Srila Jiva Goswami. The benefit of placing yourself in Krishna's hands, I am yours, I am your servant, is that you get the feeling of belonging to him. You are his. I am yours now, Lord. I belong to you, and you can do with me as you like. Just like the cow who's tied up there is the property of the master. And if the master decides to feed him good grass, he eats good grass. If he chooses to feed him thorns, he eats thorns. If he chooses not to feed him, he gets nothing. Do we trust that Krishna is going to feed us? This is what Sharanagati and surrender means, and this is the seed of bhakti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, Shraddha is the bhakti lata bija. He also says at different times that ruchi is taste. It's the same. I want this. Whatever is happening is your mercy. This is Sanatana Goswami. He's trying to pull away, but he's caught. And the Lord indeed does have his purpose. And at any moment he could have taken away the sores. If he did it at the last moment, he could have done it at the first moment, as he did with Vasudev. But he didn't want to, because he had his purpose. Do we trust that Krishna has his purpose for us? Do we trust our kind and loving Aham Bija Pita Pada? That actually he's actually there, that he's actually in control, and not a blade of grass moves, and we're in his hands. In one purport in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that a devotee is free from anxiety because he lives within the mercy of Krishna. Prabhupada in his purport says, our duty is simply to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and let him take charge, for he knows what is good for us. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse. Therefore, do not test your devotees by offering him benedictions. Since all people desire something other than the proper thing, your worship, the proper thing, you should do what you think is good for us. Just as the father knows what is beneficial or harmful for the son, when he should study or play, do what is best according to your opinion. Do what is best according to your opinion after considering if giving benedictions is beneficial or harmful for me. You do not have to ask for my approval again. This shows Preeti Maharaj's trust in the Lord. Gotapte Varanampata. You are my guardian, you are everything for me. I'm yours. This is what is being tested. Tenth canto, another comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And this is, again, this is what gives us the eligibility to go back to Godhead. This is from Brahma's Prayers. We all know this verse, and we know that it is the essence of that Adhikar, tatayanu kampam su sumikshamano bhunjane vapma kripavabhakam ridvag vibhapurbir dadadhanam namaste jivateyo mukti pade sadayabhak. My dear Lord, one who earnest, this is the mentality, the devotional mentality that qualifies to take the greatest step towards Braja, the surrender that is required. One who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, all the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, he is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Vishwanath's purport, comment. Now that Brahma has rejected other processes of advancement and accepted bhakti as the means to attain Bhagavan Sri Krishna, the process of bhakti is described. This verse describes what bhakti is. A giving oneself to Krishna, a placing oneself in his hands as one serves. A devotee understands that the happiness and distress he undergoes due to performing bhakti and his performance of bhakti and his committing of aparads while he's performing his bhakti are special mercy from the Lord. The distress that he undergoes, the happiness and distress, they are given by him. It is like the father who sometimes makes his child drink milk and sometimes makes him drink bitter neem juice, which is just what Sanatana Goswami said the praise of the Lord was. It tasted to him like bitter neem juice, and that's the medicine the Lord was giving him. Sometimes the father embraces and kisses his son, and other times he beats him. The devotee accepts whatever happens to him as the arrangement of the Lord acting for his benefit. The devotee thinks, the Lord certainly knows what's best for me, even if I don't know. Even if I don't know, karma and time have no effect on a devotee, so that this is Krishna's personal arrangement for me. What is the this? What's happening? The distress? The happiness? Whatever is happening. Out of his mercy, Krishna sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes he gives me distress, considering how to engage me in his service. And then he quotes from that verse from Preeti Maharaj. As a father not waiting for the son's demand does everything for the benefit of the son, please bestow upon me whatever you think is best for me. That is the prayer of a devotee. The person who spends his life offering respects with body, mind, and words to the lotus feet of the Lord, like Preeti Maharaj, while tolerating the sufferings of austerities or other hardships, such a person becomes the recipient of two results, liberation from material bondage and the service of the Lord. So this is the test. This is what is being tested. One of the purposes of a test that is not stressed with the tests we usually have taken in school or university, One of the purpose of test is self-examination, self-assessment. And for a devotee who is aspiring to come to this level, this is the prime reason. What is being tested? We should know that. What is being tested is how we take the difficulties and happinesses in life. Do we see them, all, each and every one of them, as coming from our beneficent Lord and Master, the one we have taken shelter of? Or do we run mentally, physically? Do we run from Krishna? Because running from Krishna's gifts, like Sanatana tried to commit suicide, he tried to take shelter in his service. Running from Krishna and how he's dealing with us is running from Krishna, from his shelter. And therefore, this very, very easy to say, the words come from my mouth so easily, so easy to do, to say and difficult to do, just if we master this one thing, seeing Krishna's mercy in everything, that makes us eligible living in this way, to go back to Godhead, to leave this material world and be home. One who sees in this way is not in the material world. Vishvapurna Sukhayate. He's in the land of happiness because he's living within the soft hands of Krishna. He's living, like Prabhupada said, living in Vrindavan, is living on the lap of Krishna. But why so much distress? Why so much distress? Sometimes I think I've just had enough of the difficulties. Can't some rose petals come? Why does it seem like it's always thorns? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur speaks on this point in his comment in the very close to the end of the 10th canto, in the 88th chapter, where Sukadev will go on to describe about Vrikashura. But first, there's a very heavy verse. Where Krishna says, when I especially favor someone, Harishya Tadanam Shanai, I gradually deprive him of his wealth. Whatever we place our consciousness in and are attached to, that's our wealth. We think that's going to protect us. So Krishna says, when I favor someone especially, I deprive him gradually of his wealth. Then the relatives and friends of such a poverty-stricken man abandon him. He has no shelter. In this way, he suffers one distress after another. Should we put this on as our main preaching? Everyone, please become a devotee. Gradually, you'll suffer one distress after another. Jai! There's one lecture I recently heard where Prabhupada, he's talking in Mayapur about how everyone should be free from all materialistic desires and especially free from all sex desires, and all the devotees saying, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada. This was in 1976, and Krishna will take everything away. Jai Prabhupada, Haribol, in 1976. But it is not easy. I played that to Sachinanda Maharaj, and he said, when I heard that, I became afraid. But he meant it. He just saw the raw but yet immature enthusiasm. It was true enthusiasm, but it was raw. It was the enthusiasm of children. But to go through life in this consciousness, that is something different. Holding on to Krishna's lotus feet, no matter what is happening. But what this ability, this surrender, this depth of faith, this depth of taste, Yes, the taste of shelter under the Amrita raining nectar of the umbrella of Krishna's lotus feet. That taste, what could be more valuable to obtain than that? Consider the time of death. If we have not mastered surrender, terror will enter our heart and it will capture us. Now, there's, before I even read this by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, how he comments on this in such a deep and meaningful way, I would like to read something Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says about the tests. He says, the tendency for sin has been given to test us. In the same manner as money, rice, a copy of the Bhagavatam are placed before an infant at the time of the first rice, the first grain-giving ceremony, to see what he takes according to his natural tendency. So we go through life and we see where our mind is going, tendency to sin, tendency to enjoy, etc., to see what our natural tendency is. So when it comes to see what our consciousness does in the time of difficulty, the difficulties we have to see as Krishna's mercy. Not, and as a product of our bad karma. When something bad happens to me, will I have the audacity to say that I'm innocent and I didn't deserve anything? I'm such a good boy. I never did anything wrong. I never caused harm to any creatures in this life. I never got pleasure out of seeing the suffering of others in this life. What to speak of my unlimited past lives? So can I say that I don't deserve it? I tend to see myself as the picture of innocence, a good guy. And then I think, why is Krishna doing this to me? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, God's cruelty to ascribe him giving me trouble, an angry God, that mood, is what the human intellect considers when it is apathetic to God, when it has no relationship with Krishna, in fact, when it has no love for Krishna. He ascribes cruelty to him. If one takes it to be a punishment, even God is punishing me, Krishna is punishing me for something I've done, rather than shaking me and trying to make me hold more tightly to his lotus feet, even if I see it as a punishment, my karma, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, it is to be understood that in such a person is wanting, lacking in a serving temperament and attraction to Krishna. This is the first meaning of a test. The first meaning of a test is the mirror to see where we actually stand. No one else may be able to see, but we go through these things each and every day. God is the shelter for all. He sends many obstacles and inconveniences to those who wish for shelter under him in order to test their desires and their steadiness. For example, when the vaidya, the physician, prescribes bitter and astringent, bad-tasting medicines and a distasteful diet, or the doctor opens the boil with his knife, if the patient is displeased with the doctor on the grounds that they are cruel and not his well-wisher, his decision is wrong and he has taken his real friends to be his enemies. Now, back to the comment of Vishwanath on this point. I give him distress. I'm trying to make him hold tighter to the rope that I've lowered down the well of his material existence, and the snakes I've placed down there, and the shaking, the earthquake that's making the waves of the walls of the well makes him hold on tighter. That's what I want. A man suffering, this is the comment of Vishwanath, a man suffers when he loses his wealth. And due to poverty, he suffers even more being rejected by his relatives. Devotees of the Supreme Lord experience both happiness and distress, not as the fruit of their karma. It is not coming from the karma of a devotee, but, and this is very important, as an incidental effect of their loving reciprocation with the Lord. Krishna is giving something to increase our devotion, and the happiness and distress we feel is not coming from Krishna directly. It is our reaction incidentally to his kindly trying to make us hold on to him more tightly. Because I'm attached to something that's being pulled away from me. It's me who's attached. It's not Krishna who's making me attached. It's not Krishna wants me to suffer that misery. It's me who's attached to my body. And when I'm dying, it's me who's suffering. It's because of my attachment. And and that misery is coming incidentally to his desire to increase my loving devotion and surrender and the tightness of my holding on to him. No matter what you do to me, O Lord, I don't care. Just allow me to have the shelter of your lotus feet. It is possible. It is possible to develop that consciousness. It is impractical to not develop that consciousness of Sharanagati, of surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. Because everything else is going to be taken away from us, undoubtedly, practically, undeniably. Where will our shelter be? So our false shelters, they will be given up. And Krishna helps us. He gives us a shake, a good shake, so we can understand what medicine we actually need to take in the severity of our disease. Now, because it's 15 minutes before when the class is supposed to end, and there's a lot more to read, very deep and very important, where Vishwanath reveals this whole science, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I'll continue with it tomorrow. And we'll just end with something. But this is deep. This is deep. If we get to this point where we can hold on to Krishna's lotus feet, bhajan kore sadhan kore mrityu jamle hoy, this is the test. And it will be tested at death. The test of our bhajan, the test of our sadhan. And then based on this principle of surrender, love for Krishna is built. This is the foundation. We want to be there without a foundation. We want to build, I tend to want to quickly jump. But the foundation of unswerving holding on to the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna is what bhakti, braja bhakti, is based upon. So just, there's one little talk, or 6 minutes worth, Adi Purusha Prabhu, the one from four, the fourth class. I don't want to leave without us hearing Prabhupada just speak very briefly on test. So please hand out the handout, number four, and then we'll end. Okay, raise your hand if you don't have it yet. But it's very short. And Prabhu. Okay, here. I found it. Ma Bhagavat. Prabhu. Ready? Man the volume. Because it's short.
To become Krishna conscious, fully devoted, Kanna Vilasa Sarsundam. It is very, very difficult. High quality. Bhavanam Janmanavante, Jnanavan. With Jnana, after Jnana, there is the stage of bhakti. Without Jnana, bhakti is Kanishka Adhikar. With Jnana, is Uttam Adhikar. These are described by Chaitanya. The Chaitanya Chaitanya. So the idea is that if one is advanced devotee, then all the good qualities will be visible in him. Tashasi bhakti, bhagavati, akinchana, akinchana. He has no other desire, akinchana bhakti. If he has got any other desire to fulfill, then it is mixed. It is not Shuddha bhakti. It is Vidha bhakti. Karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, yoga mishra bhakti. Bhakti must be there. Otherwise, karma, jnana, yoga, nothing is successful. Bhakti must be there. But when karma, jnana, yoga, everything is without contamination, simply bhakti, jnana karma rana britam, that stage is anukullena Krishna anusilanam. Simply to satisfy. Now, here Krishna is advising. So, anukullena Krishna anusilanam. There is a parikshaka as Krishna is examining. Similarly, Arjuna also very intelligently acting. He knew that although Krishna was encouraging him to kill Asatthama, he wanted to see me, how I deal with the man. This is also. So there is competition between bhakta. Duye lage hura huri. It is stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. In between Radha and Krishna, Krishna is being enlightened by seeing Radharani. And Radharani is becoming more beautiful by seeing Krishna. Duye lage hura hura. The competition. This is described in the fourth chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, it is transcendental sporting between the devotee and the Lord. It is not Nirvisheshma. The Lord wants to see how he is my pure devotee. And the devotee wants to see that I will not accept anything from Krishna. I shall sacrifice everything for Krishna. That is, duye lage hura ho. That is devotee, that is Krishna. So, here Arjuna is being examined by Krishna. Krishna wants to examine his devotee. How staunch devotee he is. Just like the Pandavas. They are put into so many troubles. They lost their kingdom. They lost their wife. Insulted. The wife was endeavored to become naked. Pandavas never said, Krishna, you are our friend. Why you are suffering so many troubles? Never. Release your devotee. Krishna is always in faith. Krishna could do anything, but still, they never requested, neither Kunti nor Pandava. This is pure devotion. Pure devotee will never try to take anything from Krishna. He tries to give everything to Krishna. So, Vyelagi Gulabari, so here is a trial between the devotees and Lord Krishna, and Arjuna has passed the examination. Therefore, it is said, evam parikshata dharmam partha krishnena chur. He's being examined by krishnena, not ordinary person. But he passed the examination by naichanahantum guru dham. In spite of Krishna's, injection that he did, he did not like to. Naichan hantam guru dham. Tadapi atmahanang ma. Although he is the greatest criminal. Thank you.
Very deep subject matter. Okay, we'll end here.